We're in the City Cafe the day after the Fringe, and I'm just catching up with Juliet Burton, and it is a catch-up interview from when we last spoke at Brighton Fringe. So what are you going to do next year?
Everyone's asking me what I'm doing now, and I'm my general answer has been sleep. I need to sleep first, but next year, I think, touch wood, I'd love to do another new show, and I've already got a plan for that one, but I think that if I'm going to be touring in the next year, then I will most likely be doing this year's show, Look At Me, and last year's show, When I Grow Up, and I don't know yet whether that'll be every day, but two shows a day, or whether it'll be one on each, like, alternate days, but either way, it'll be both shows, and yeah, I think that's probably going to be the best thing. And then I'm working on a third show already that I've already started researching, called Daddy's Girl. So that's going to be something in the pipeline that I'm very excited about.
You heard it here first. Are you unravelling?
Energetically or emotionally or everything?
Well, I guess it's both, because it is energetically at the Fringe, but also it's to do with the material that you're choosing.
Yeah, I am. I think I made a joke in this year's show at the end of it about I can't reveal everything about who I am because there needs to be another show next year. And I think I hope that I'm growing as a person and therefore as a performer, which means that I can share a bit more of who I am, but exploring and finding out who I am within the show myself, and then each time I share more with the audience, they seem to respond to that honesty in a really cathartic way, maybe. Yeah, as I was saying to you just before we started recording, that I think the audience responses this year have been even more passionate than with the last show, and they've just been saying how vital it is they bring people along, that it's an important message, but it's also so exciting, and I've taken it as a huge compliment actually that quite a few people, mainly men, have messaged me saying I didn't know what to expect, or it wasn't what I was expecting, but I absolutely loved it, it was incredible, it was amazing. And I think that's a huge compliment, that if you can subvert the expectations of what somebody came in thinking they were going to be seeing, not that I've deceived them, but that their minds have been opened even more, then that's got to be a good thing.
Something I heard set up at this particular Fringe was a few years back, the message shows got bashed by quite a lot of critics, and we've come through this kind of post-banking crisis. The world's, you know, we don't want to look at the news at the moment about everything that's going on. So message shows are okay at the moment, aren't they?
Not that I'd be the voice of certainty about that, but yeah, I love shows where I leave feeling something, like it's actually moved me from one position to another. And I think message shows can be good as long as that's not their primary purpose. Like, their primary purpose has to be to entertain, and as long as people leave feeling entertained, if there's a message in there as well, then that's got to be grand. But yeah, I think if it's just a message show, then that's got to probably just be a TED talk. But if it's a message show that's also entertaining and fun and uplifting and silly, then yeah, that's my kind of show.
Now, it's quite a long run at Edinburgh. It's almost like a short tour. So can you just compare the script and the way you got the show ready on day one to the last show that you did?
Completely different show, to me anyway. Probably to a lot of other people, they come and say, well, that's the same show. But for me, I feel like there were the different stages of firstly getting really confident with what I was saying, how I delivered it, then next, like knowing the ups and downs and undulations, like when I need to be a bit more zany and a bit more fun, a bit more high energy, and when I can be really enjoy the internal and sort of introverted moments. And then, of course, for me in my show, because we do have a moment in it where I tried to deconstruct the notion of being a performer on the stage and having the audience looking at me and saying, right, well, I've done a show called Look At Me, and that might seem a bit vain. Well, let's just look at that for a moment, because none of us are what we seem. That bit is the beginning of a section where I talk about my the fact that I'm still standing on stage with these problems. Like, it's not that you suddenly get better, and that had a great reaction, that part of the show as well. But in the middle of the Fringe, a certain Mr. Robin Williams lost his fight to his own inner demons, and there was this big elephant in the room, and it came the day before my day off, and I had a day where everyone was tweeting and Facebooking about, you know, God, this puts everything into perspective. That changed my show probably the most significantly for me, because the next time I performed it, I just thought, I have to change something about this. It brought another level to, for me anyway, to really it reinforced what I was saying, that you can't judge a book by its cover at all, that all of us are walking around with something going on inside that no one else knows anything about. So yeah, God, it's been a crazy Fringe.
And is it therapy for you?
No. No, I need to go back to see my therapist soon. I'm so tired. I think it's probably an education more than therapy for me, that I have to, the way that I do these shows where I spend months and months and months researching and putting them together and exploring these new ideas that I learn so much about personally, and then bringing other people into that journey, trying to entertain them at the same time, that's helping me expand my own horizons. And I'd never finished my school education, as you know, because you came to see when I grew up. And I actually feel now that these shows are kind of better than a school education, because I get to pick a topic that interests me. So this time it was about appearances and disability and physical difference, as well as internal battles the nuances of self-image and self-perception. And I get to explore that for months and months and months, and then I get to bring other people into that journey and get them to ask questions. And so it's not therapy, it's cathartic, definitely, but it also is helping me learn new things all the time, not least as a performer, because the Fringe has taught me a lot about performance again. It's been fantastic. I hope that I'm getting better as a performer.
And what's it specifically taught you about comedy?
This Fringe generally, I was just talking to somebody else about this, a venue manager, that I certainly think that there's been a massive shift in the last few years about within the comedy circuit, that especially at Fringes, that you have still got the stand-ups and the sketch acts and the kind of slightly more predictable shows that can be really, really fantastic, like, but they are what you are expecting. But the things that people are excited about the most, or at least I'm excited about the most, me being people, are the shows that subvert expectations or push the boundaries even more, or mix different mediums, so theatre and comedy and stand-up, because audiences are getting cleverer, I think. I think audiences are kind of sitting there wanting, so they're going like, I know what you're about to do, because you're saying, oh, I know what you're thinking when you look at me, or I know what you're, I know, you know... all the traditional stand-up techniques and sketch act techniques, audiences know them now and they're well versed in them, so if you can come on stage and start taking them in that direction but then pull the wool from under their feet, under their eyes, what's the phrase, I'm so tired, but yeah, just kind of saying, giving a nod to the audience, saying, look, we know you're not an idiot, we know that you know what we're trying to do with this, so let's have fun with that very notion, that very construct. I mean, I saw Gaines Family Gift Shop and thought that was fantastic for sketch, because it does exactly that. Also, like, for pure stand-up, Lost Voice Guy. Did you see Lost Voice Guy at all? No, he's got cerebral palsy, so he can't speak. So he's a stand-up comedian who can't speak. And that's just brilliant in itself, as I want to go see that, because it's different and new. What is it taught me about comedy? I think comedy is changing, and it's really exciting to see how it's changing.
Two final questions and then you can sleep. The first one is a wonderfully weird one that I'm going to ask you first, and I'm going to ask lots of other people this one.
Okay.
So you're on stage in your venue each night, and right at the back there is an enormous mirror the size of however big the wall is. So you're going to do the show, but staring back at you in this enormous mirror is you during the whole performance. How would that affect your performance?
I get distracted, probably, knowing me. I get easily distracted. I think I'd have to blank it out, maybe. Because if I was looking at myself the entire time I was on stage, I wouldn't be able to get out of my own head as much. Because when I'm standing there and I don't have to look at myself, I'm just looking at this wonderful group of people who've come to spend an hour of their lives and my life with me, then I get taken out of my own head, and I get to go on a journey with them. But if I was staring back at myself, I that would be too much of me in that room. I've got to have an escape from myself, which is weird, because I know that's a weird thing to say, because if I'm on stage for an hour and it's just me talking for an hour, which essentially that is what my show is, then that would sound like it was a vanity project. But if I was staring at myself at the same time, that would just freak me out too much. If anything, standing on stage and talking for an hour is a way for me to not be in my head as much. So no, I think you'd probably ruin me if you did that.
That's a good answer. And then the last question then, it's just about, always I ask about the onward journey then. So where next for you?
Bed. And then after bed, well, I've got a couple of jobs down in London, filming, which is exciting, just paid, which is nice as well. And then I've got lots of follow-up meetings, mostly down in London, and I'd like to go to Australia again. Lots of the meetings I'm having, it's kind of surrounding that kind of plan, rough idea. It has to involve, I need to get somebody to take me over there. So it's just about finding who, pairing myself up with the people that I'm going to be working with from now onwards. But then the stuff that I definitely know is happening is, as I said earlier, they're definitely coming back next year to Edinburgh. It wouldn't be Edinburgh, but it wouldn't be August for me if I weren't in Edinburgh. And definitely working on at least one, if not two, shows for either 2016 or late 2015.
Packed houses at the Edinburgh Fringe. Juliet Burton is now asleep.